Right now, if you're scaffing, critting, screeding, HVACing, dunny diving, or electricianing and sparking, then you don't want to be sitting on the side of the road with a work truck that's smoking. You could get an insurance company that includes roadside assistant for when your work truck ain't starting and needs towing. Get on to truckassist.com.au. It's insurance to keep on earning and bacon and egg rolling. Limits and exclusions apply. Consider the PDS and TMD on the Truck Assist website.
This week on Full Credit to the Noise, the waters get salty. No crowds in pit lane get to witness an old-fashioned Donnybrook. And we talk about the future of supercars at Albert Park. Welcome to Full Credit to the Noise. Well, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Full Credit to the Noise. You can find this podcast on X, F, Facebook, and Instagram at FCTTN Podcast, all one word. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at former_legend. You can find the bloke across from me on Twitter at AVL_motorsport. He's on Instagram at AVL.motorsport. He's on YouTube at AVL.makeup.tips. He's a man who on Friday night pulled Logan Sargent out of an Uber and took his ride from the front of Kittens. He brake tested tourists on the Travelator at Melbourne Airport, and tonight he's wearing a Gunter Steiner face mask. Welcome to Speed Cafe's Andrew Van Leeuwen.
Hello, former, and as usual, many thanks for that succinct yet accurate description of the weekend that I did just have. And thanks for the shout out for my YouTube channel as well. I've been really working on the blends there, so it's good that you've highlighted that. People can see
the very fact you even know the word blend is disturbing to me, yeah, to be honest.
I'm just making stuff up. Anyway, it was another amazing post-COVID drive to survive era Australian Grand Prix. Like, you've been around the traps for a while. It's actually hard to describe when you know what that event looked like a decade ago. You know, like, I mean, back in those days, if someone at the pub asked me on a Friday night of the event if I could score any tickets for the rest of the weekend, like, someone at the AGPC would happily have handed over, like, honest to God, grandstand tickets if I asked nicely. Yep. Like, that was a normal thing that did definitely happen. And you just cannot get tickets. No one's got tickets. Everything's at capacity. Obviously, with the way, and, you know, we'll touch a bit on the logistics of the whole weekend, but, like, even getting people into hospitality, like, everything is just so hard because everyone wants to be there. It is, It really is insane. And, you know, we'll touch on the crowd figure in a moment, but what really made it hit home for me this morning was that at 10 a.m., I checked out of my hotel. I wanted to dump my suitcase at Southern Cross Station so I could go for a wander around town and have some lunch and stuff. It took three goes to find a luggage place that wasn't either full already or had a queue around the block. Like, no shit. And it was all punters in F1 gear trying to store their luggage somewhere because they're obviously flying out in the afternoon. Like, that's the full effect of a successful event, right?
Yep.
Like, it's not just crowd numbers and people at the event. When you see the impact that it has on the city, and it's a pain in the backside if you're trying to store your bag, but that's people spending money in a city. Like, it really was something quite amazing to see.
It's interesting too. I mean, I remember they used to separate it from the AFL, so there was no AFL during the weekend of the Grand Prix, and now there's not, which just adds to the...
People were going... I mean,
one could say vibrancy.
Was it the Thursday night game that was Saints against Pies? Yeah, it was. Thursday night.
I think
night.
So, yeah, so, the big game, yeah.
You know, there was a bunch of very lucky people doing both. I had journos, like, that I know from overseas who were there who had got tickets to the footy. There was a fair bit, you know, there were guys in the corporate world going, well, we're going from here to there to a box there. Like, it actually ties in together. I mean, they used to try to avoid that because the event was struggling.
Yep.
And you didn't need factors like the footy potentially having an impact on ticket sales. That's just not an issue anymore. You just don't have... I mean, I reckon the footy grounds probably feel a bit of an influx from the fact people are already in town, you know?
Well, it's one of those things. If you went in Rome, you may as well hang out and go and have a look at the AFL as well if you haven't seen it before.
Exactly.
It's a great it's a great sport to go and watch live. Yeah, look, it was an amazing event. I mean, Max Verstappen didn't win a race. I mean, who would have thought?
Yeah, that's always good.
Carlos Sainz headed the Ferrari 1-2. Max's right wheel caught on fire, right rear wheel caught on fire. A fire that hadn't been celebrated since my Uncle Pete's VL Commodore mysteriously caught on fire 3 days after he paid comprehensive insurance. Yeah. It was a total of, I don't know what happened, a total of 452,000 spectators that attended across the 4 days. Or to put that into perspective, 452,000 spectators is the equivalent of 452 Perth Glory games.
Yep.
And every day, the numbers are up from the year before. McLaren boss Andre Stella has explained why his team instructed Oscar Piastri to move aside for Lando Norris during the Formula One Australian Grand Prix, which went down like a tongue kiss at a christening. Yep. I know this might be unpopular, AVL, and it's probably too early to podcast, but I'm going to say it anyway. Let's talk about parity.
Yeah, happy to do that.
Carrera Cup, top 10, all Porsches.
I know. Yeah, they do have to work on that. Well, look, Carrera Cup is often the example cited as what we do ultimately need to just avoid in supercars, and we're probably about as close as we're ever going to get before that does become an issue. But parity certainly was discussed much less than it has been since Newcastle, actually since Adelaide 2022, to be perfectly honest. I reckon there was less parity discussion on the weekend than there has been since that point, you know, certainly since we've had Gen 3 cars on track. So that was a massive positive. I do want to run through some of the positives about supercars at the Grand Prix, because at the end of the day, a couple of weeks ago, it felt like the smartest of smart money was on supercars not being at Albert Park next year.
Very much so. Yes, I agree.
I would say right now there is zero doubt that supercars will be back there next year.
Well, the racing was great, to be honest with you. No pit stops.
Beyond that, so like, let's look at, you know, were there some operational issues with having the trucks out, you know, on the village green instead of inside the circuit? Yes, but they had to do that when they were in the garages anyway. Those temporary garages were fine. You know, like, yep, there were people saying they were much easier to work in than the pit building because they were huge. Like, they were big garages. Mm. The flooring is, there's nothing wrong with that flooring. You know, I know the weather was good and all this sort of stuff, but those whole setups could have copped plenty. You know, it really was nothing wrong from that perspective. The fans thing, in terms of not having fans have access to the garages, needs to be sorted. So they probably need to reconfigure how they do it, because it was sort of garages facing each other, obviously.
Can I ask something? Why is that so important?
It's important to the teams purely just from a commercial point of view, because you want to be able to get... It was quite difficult to get sort of guests in and that sort of stuff, to get through to do pit tours and that sort of stuff. Like, and again, because the race has grown to the size that it has, like getting places without the right pass just... It was very, very difficult, as it should be. But, you know, when you work at big events all the time, you get pretty good at getting where you need to get, you know, with whatever you're working with. But, yeah, there was definitely another sort of step up in how they were policing access to most areas.
Okay.
And it is, like, it is important. It's, you know, supercars has written into its operations manual that you can't block out the back of garages. You know, fans need to be able to see that. It is a sport that prides itself on the fact that you can't go and sit in the change rooms at the MCG, you know, half an hour before bounce down at a footy match. It's just not what happens. Yep. But supercars, you can stand at the back of the Triple Eight garage and watch the drivers getting ready, watch them hop in the car, all that sort of stuff. So that's sometimes a difficult concept for Formula One, I think, because if you've ever been in the F1 paddock, you can see nothing.
Yeah.
So you walk down the middle, the hospitality units are on one side, the garages are on the other, you cannot see anything in the back of the garage.
Walls.
Yeah, it is walls. And it's a maze of walls to make sure you can't see anything.
Yep.
And the drivers run between one and the other, like literally basically sprint out of the back of the garage after a session into the hospitality, and they don't come back until they really need to. So that needs to be sorted for next year. There are already discussions about how that happens, how they get the fans back out. I mean, they could set up an external supercars paddock on the outside of the circuit. You just need circuit access for them to be able to drive on and off. So that's one of the sort of things that's bubbling along in the background. But the AGPC wants supercars there. We're talking about a crowd of over 450,000 people. Supercars would have to be crazy, and I mean batshit crazy to not want to be there.
Yeah.
There is just so much commercial upside to it. And that's what...
I agree totally. It was if there was, look, there's not a lot of downside to the weekend's racing. The racing was pretty good from
the
board. It was exciting. The
racing was good.
Yep. I mean, the only thing I would say is it was kind of hard after four races to remember what happened in each of the races.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were writing this podcast, I was like, oh, what happened?
Yeah, totally.
I can't remember. That and, you know, 3 days on heavy duty drinking didn't help either. But maybe. Yeah.
No, I think the racing was good. There are a lot of tracks where you do need pit stops to bring that strategic element into it. But Albert Park isn't necessarily one of them because just of how wide it is, you know, passing is possible there. And I think that's why we see some of these marginal, like we see drivers making mistakes, we see guys on different lines, we see cars being in places where other drivers aren't expecting them to be. Because they're actually... This is one of the few places where, you know, particularly compared to a street track, where the supercars look tiny.
Yep.
You know, so that actually helps the racing. I don't think having pit stops there would have added a single thing. And if anything, when you get drivers going, well, I could go try pass him, or I can wait and try and do it around the stops. I think there was probably some moves that were put on that wouldn't have been put on if there were pit stops.
And it's one of those tracks that it gets undersold a little bit as far as great race circuits of the calendar, but it's one of those tracks that also has consequences, as Brock, you know, went on to famously say, good racetracks have consequences. Yeah. Just ask a few of the Formula One boys who turned them into canoes and a couple of our guys, that stuck it into the wall.
Russell crash at the end, if that's at Yas Marina, what happens? Nothing. He runs off the road and drives back on. You know, and not that we're not advocating to try and hurt guys, but there absolutely needs to be consequences at racetracks.
Absolutely.
You know, so
I totally agree.
I think with the right, I think they tried so hard to create, when they had the really aggressive mixed compound for supercars last year, and I think taking the pit stops away just kind of worked. It was kind of what it needed.
I agree.
You want to finish ahead of, the guy in front of you? Guess what? Go pass him. And you can, because this is a big, long, flowing circuit. Grip levels are changing all the time. It's dusty, all that sort of stuff. I really felt like this was some great racing on the weekend,
And
it just shows how much can change in a weekend. And I just can't imagine that supercars won't be at the AGP next year. And I'm a big fan of that, and I always have been. And you know what?
Mm.
Why can't it be the season opener?
Well,
why not?
I mean, yeah.
It's a big event. It's one of the biggest sporting events in the country. Why not open the season there? Who cares if you're not the headliner? Who cares? Like, it didn't detract from anything.
That might be a problem given that it is the Formula One's opening head round next year. Does it get lost in all of that? Maybe. I don't know.
Does it get lost more than, like, the Bathurst fight? Well, the visibility was so much more than... You know, the Bathurst 500.
It's so true.
The visibility is still going to... If you can swallow some pride and just go, hey, we're a support category here. Who cares? What a place to be a support category.
What's there or Cessnock?
Yeah, well, I think Cessnock would be cool. You know, there are a couple of new street tracks in the works. And there's... You know, that would be great, but I really wouldn't have a problem if that was the opener. It might be the solution we're looking for. Who knows?
Now, finally, before we go into the shift cut, probably the biggest issue to come out of Albert Park all weekend, speaking to people all around the track, and because we're coming up to the cooler months of the year, do you agree with me that there should be mandatory backburning of Matt Kosh's beard?
Oh, no.
Now, I'm telling you, we need to get on top of that thing before next summer and at least put in some fire trails. Don't say I didn't warn you come November.
It's already bright red, so there's that. But it has become his trademark style, and it's very well known in the Formula One paddock. I'll tell you that right now.
All right, let's go to the shift cut. Well, first story: Cam Waters clashes with Matt Payne, but resists temptation to reenact Longhurst and Morris. Much to my disappointment.
Yeah, get into it, Cam. Come on.
I think he opened the door and went, "Oh, that's right, you're on the other side. What a shame." Tempers flared at Albert Park as Matt Payne and Cam Waters clashed while battling for the lead for the third supercars race the Australian Grand Prix weekend. The two Ford drivers were engaged in a heated battle for the lead on the second lap of the Saturday evening race when they came to blows at the final corner. figuratively and maybe literally. Payne had got past Waters at turn 11 before Waters got into Payne's rear bumper at turn 13. Speaking to the broadcast a few moments later, a fired up Waters questioned Payne's spatial awareness. Waters then took aim at Supercars media reporter Garth Tanner. He said, "I didn't really look at the car," he said after Garth asked him if he'd been able to survey the damage. "I was too busy trying to get to the door to have a look at him. The boys will fix her up all night. I've got an amazing crew. I'll pick my bottom lip up and try again tomorrow. Hey, Garth."
Did you say he tried to get to the door to have a look at him or talk to him?
Maybe it was a talk to him.
Yeah, look, there's a fair bit to unpack here. That little jab at Garth after Garth called out his attitude after the Bathurst 500 was definitely some very entertaining TV. Garth is absolutely no stranger to a tear up himself and has pretty thick skin, so I think he took that in his stride, which was impressive as well.
Oh.
As for the incident and Cam's reaction, like, I just want to start by saying it was awesome.
I love it.
Like, it's exactly what we need. It's what we need to be seeing.
I love
it. It's great TV. It's great entertainment. There is a little part of me that thinks it's a little rich to unload someone on one corner and then be furious when he unloads you at the
100%.
Next. But I won't be critical of Cam for going and having that chat because they are the TV pictures we need. To break down the incident a little more, I think the stewards absolutely nailed it by not punishing anyone.
Yeah.
It was actually quite interesting. So I was chatting with Tommy Randall on Sunday evening about that crash and... obviously, you know, he's teammates with Cam and they're very close, but he sort of said, like, even parking all that, he was adamant that it was Matt's fault because the initial contact from Cam sort of just ran Matt wide while Matt ended both their races, which to some point I do understand, but at the end of the day, Cam started it and Matt finished it, you know? So to me, correct, no penalty is absolutely fine. And Matt said that he didn't know Cam was there, which again, like Tom sort of mentioned, well, that's not great. And he's right. But remembering when you've just been unloaded while leading the race or fighting for the race lead, yep, like you've got a bit on when you're trying to gather the thing.
Well,
you can't be looking in your mirrors everywhere, go, hey, I've just got to try and open up this corner and because I could end up back in 10th if I don't get on with this a little bit. So I think it was a racing incident. I think it was a really good racing incident and it was highly entertaining. And yeah. Good stuff.
Well, quite rightly, I think he was looking at his driver's side mirror because he had full Athene. And yeah, so he was covering the inside.
Absolutely.
Never thought about the outside. I wouldn't have thought he would have thought about the outside. And that's just part of the deal. I mean, the only thing I want to say more about this is Ned Australian Whiskey
have come back with it.
They put out an open letter, but they invited people to use the code SALTYCAM for free Australia-wide shipping on any of their products.
The code worked. The code actually worked. I punched it in and had a look. It worked. You know, that's.
But surely they've missed an opportunity. It should have been Salty Waters.
You're right. Should have been. But that's great active marketing from brands involved in the sport.
Great.
You know, that's fantastic. Absolutely what we want to see. So, yes, it's frustrating for the team. I feel for the mechanics that are fixing Cam's car until 2:30 in the morning or whatever. But we want guys racing like that. It's entertaining.
Yep.
And we want those very honest reactions. So, yeah, it was great. It was good, entertaining motorsport.
Probably the other piece of niggle to come out of the weekend for supercars was Nick Percat unloading on WAU in race win interview. Now, it hasn't gone unnoticed the entire team here at Full Credit to the Noise that Nick Percat has enjoyed beating his old team a few times already this year, and he took the occasion to slip the boot in to his old workplace on Sunday. After winning the final supercar race of the weekend at Albert Park, he stepped it up a level and he said, "I wanted to quit. The last 18 months, I hated every second with that mob. Honestly, the moment I walked into MSR, I knew this is where I needed to be. So a huge thanks to everyone. AVL, am I right in saying there hasn't been a lot of love lost since Nick departed the WAU nest both ways?"
Well, let's not forget that Ryan Walkinshaw was talking about, you know, the big, big, big with three bigs culture shift on car two this year over the weekend as well, which was obviously a pretty deliberate dig at the way things were going with Nick. The love was lost long before Nick left that team. At the end of the day, you know, as much as there is still tension And as much as Nick was like the walking, talking definition of schadenfreude on Sunday afternoon, you know, after winning that race, him leaving that team was a win-win for everyone involved. The relationship just didn't work. And Nick needed to leave to start performing better as a driver. And the team needed the breath of fresh air that is Ryan Wood, you know. And Ryan's going to have his big result at some point. And WAU will have its day to brag. You know, as tense as it all is, I'm actually really happy for Nick and I'm really happy for WAU with what it has the potential to build with Chaz and Woody in that team. And I think everyone's going to be much better for, you know, for that relationship coming to the end in the long run.
Well, you say that because the next story might make a liar of you. Matt Stone Racing and Waukesha Andretti United clash repeatedly at Albert Park, both on and allegedly off the track. Now, in the four races on the weekend, Matt Stone Racing cars and the Waukesha Andretti United cars came together on a number of occasions, resulting in some interesting chats in the paddock after a couple of the races. On Friday, Chaz Mostert went down and had a chat to Nick Percat with professional mediator Andrew Van Leeuwen on hand to keep it all tidy and stick his head on camera. And then on Sunday, things got even more heated after Ryan Wood was handed a 30-second penalty for turning Cameron Hill around. That particular clash resulted in an alleged, and we say alleged, altercation between MSR commercial staffer Slade Perrins and WAU CEO Bruce Stewart. I mean, AVL, just when you thought washed up rugby league players was the worst thing could possibly happen to the time-honoured sport of boxing, along comes supercars to cheapen the sport even further.
There was definitely no boxing going on as far as I understand. Look, nobody's denying that there was a bit of a heated exchange between Slade and Bruce, you know, which started over the Woody and Hill contact. Obviously, the context of what we just spoke about with Percat and MSR and all that, it plays into the whole thing. It's worth noting that Slade was a journo before he moved into Teamland. And believe me, this is a job that comes with its ebbs and flows in terms of your paddock relationships as well. So, you know,
really?
That's something to... Yeah, you'd be shocked. you know, how significant was any physical aspect to the altercation? I didn't see it with my own eyes, so I'm definitely not going to comment on that. There was a reference to a shove in the official complaint. We don't want people getting hurt. I think that goes without saying, but I'm not sure there was any evidence of that ever being the case, you know, in this situation. I think that, you know, tempers were flared and it's, again, we need that, you know. I've actually got heaps of time for both of the people involved in this, and I have to say that... You know, this stuff like this shows that this shit matters. This sport matters to the people involved in it, you know? So it's, of course, people are going to be fired up about things, and that's not necessarily a bad thing as long as we're not putting in people, you know, putting anybody in actual harm's way, you know? It's a bit of, this is the stuff we talk about for years.
I agree with what you said off camera before we started recording, that WAU would definitely flog the suitcases out of MSR if it was a cage match.
Absolutely not what I said at all. One thing I do want to say is that I actually don't agree with Woody copping 30 seconds for hitting him. Like, that was a manic battle pack. Cars everywhere. Like, did he punt him? Yes, but that stuff happens when you're racing in a pack and you've got a guy to your left and a guy to your right and a guy right up. Like, how much was Stanaway up his bumper? You can't really tell, you know? So, like...
Yeah. Was it Formula 3 or Formula 2 where the bloke deliberately run the other bloke off in practice?
That was Formula 3.
He got a four grid position penalty. I mean, that was
like,
deliberate.
Chaz copped 5 seconds for locking a brake, coming from a kilometre behind, and costing Matt Payne a race win. You know, like, he was under... It was an unforced error. He wasn't even battling the guy. He made a mistake, and he basically cost a guy, I reckon he cost Matt winning that race, you know? So
to me, that
is a far bigger offence. You know, he wasn't racing Matt. He just made a mistake and hit him, you know, and he caught 5 seconds. So that's...
Yes. And then that's put him in a place where he copped another hit from another bloke who also copped 5 seconds.
And that was just an absolute full-blown assault into turn one as well, you know, which again happens. But... Yeah, so I would like to learn more about how it ended up with sort of the 30 seconds for Woody there. That feels very harsh. When the second biggest penalty was 15, I think, for something random.
Totally agree. So. Like you said, it was a heated pack. Look, if Woody was guilty of you know, bad driving, it was in the heat of the moment. It wasn't like he deliberately ran a bloke off the road.
Yeah.
or put him in the wall, or even run him out to the car park at turn five, like so many did during the weekend. I just don't get it. 30 seconds seemed excessive to me. Triple Eight Red Bull would like to thank the field for handing them race wins over the weekend. Avial, have you ever seen a collective bunch of blokes tread on their own dicks the way Mustang drivers in particular did on the weekend? In a weekend where more cars rub paint than peak hour in Delhi, the 888 cars of Will Brown and Brock Feeney were the benefactors more often than not of just absolute door opening by the other teams. Mm. In race three on Saturday, Waters and Payne decided to test the strength of the Albert Park walls to hand the win to Brock Feeney. On Sunday, Mostert nerfed Payne to promote Percat into the lead and Will Brown and Brock Feeney into a comfortable couple of spots on the podium.
I think the great irony is that, as I mentioned before, this was the first weekend we weren't talking about parity in the Gen 3 era.
You can't.
And then,
you couldn't.
And then the Ford drivers went and did exactly what the Chev teams have been accusing them of the whole time, and that's doing a shit job. So, yeah, that would have definitely, there would have been some frustration there, I think. But, again, it comes back to the point that, you know, what we talked about before, take the pit stops out and guys have to, you know, race harder on track, and sometimes you're going to crash, and that's actually great. So let's have more of it.
I just feel like the first two weekends that we've seen of supercars this year, that Feeney and Brown have got that chairmanship luck that
Used
to follow Wincup around quite a lot. Yep. So let's head to Formula One. The story's often on the track there. Logan Sargeant was forced to give his car to Alex Albon. Now, Williams boss James, do you want to buy a vowels, like said he still has faith in Logan Sargeant despite dragging him out of his car and handing it to Alex Albon for the rest of the weekend. Albon wrote off his car in a heavy crash at Turn 6 on Friday, ruling his car out for the rest of the weekend with his chassis that was badly bent. Williams revealed that it didn't have a third chassis, so pulled Sargeant from the rest of the weekend to allow Albon to continue racing. After he witnessed this, Max asked Checo to do the same thing after two laps of the race, but was denied. Now, tell me,
that would have been imagine unfair. A bit of like Bathurst style, like bring her in, mate. Lucky we cross-ended these blokes. You beauty. No, look,
jump out.
This
champ.
Was absolutely brutal. You know, I get it on one hand, given what each spot in the Constructors' Championship is worth in Formula One. You know, like it's you have to be putting your best foot forward, even if you've only got one foot, but this is a tough one for Logan's confidence to come back from, right? The only
he can't come back from it. He can't. He now knows what the team
only,
thinks of
the
him.
The only if he needs some inspiration, I thought the same thing when Triple Eight benched Brock Feeney from quali at Bathurst in 2022 for Jamie Winkup in the wet.
Yeah,
I actually thought that was a really really rough thing to do for a guy who's trying to develop as a main game driver. And that could have some long-lasting effects. And Brock's going pretty good these days. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's not impossible to come back from something like that. But that was still brutal stuff. What I enjoyed out of it was the quotes from Max saying that if he thought the team was going to do that to him, he'd wall his own car so they'd have no chassis left at all, which I just thought was...
Does anyone doubt that?
No way. I just thought that was brilliant. I thought that was a great response. That's why this guy wins a lot of championships.
Do you... I ask you this in all seriousness, and I've thought about it, and no one knows the answer. But do you think there's drivers in that field who, in the same circumstances, who wrote a car off, would say to the team, no, I binned it, I'll take responsibility?
No. You take the car. Yeah. You'll always take the car. You might not ask
for it. Fair enough.
You might not ask for it. And you might feel bad about it, but you hop in that race car and you race it if you've got the opportunity.
Do you know a team that wouldn't do it?
Are you asking if I know one, or have you got you're going to better tell me?
Aston Martin. Pretty sure Lance won't be jumping out of the car for Alonso anytime soon, no matter what he reckons. He can write seven chassis off and Daddy's not going to let Lance jump out of the car. Speaking of Alonso called to stewards after brake testing George Russell late in the race. Fernando Alonso was given a hefty fine penalty and points off his license for potentially dangerous driving. Potentially dangerous driving can be me any day in the Australian Grand Prix. Alonso and George Russell were summoned before the stewards in Melbourne after a last lap crash involving the Mercedes driver as he battled with the Aston Martin over sixth place. Russell had been lining up Alonso for a last lap attempt at an overtake down the back straight when the Mercedes driver was caught out by a rapidly closing in on the back of the Aston Martin, negotiating turn six. The moment resulted in Russell losing control, crashing heavily, bringing out the virtual safety car to end the race. Alonso was hit with a 20-second time penalty and given 3 penalty points on his F1 Super License to what stewards refer to as potentially dangerous driving. Fair or not?
I was kind of on the fence about this one until I actually read the social media comments that Fernando made about, you know, like the art of race driving. And I have to say that that kind of swayed me to his way of thinking. Like, good race car drivers are always thinking about the strategy of racing driving. And I don't mean pit strategy or tyre management, but like, how do I race the cars around me? How can I make it not just difficult for this guy to pass me now, but for the next 2 or 3 laps, you know? How can I compromise him so that he's not a threat anymore? And if I'm passing someone, how can I pass them in a way that makes it impossible for them to keep racing me to the next corner and pass me back, you know? So I'm not sure I'm entirely comfortable with the discouragement of that. If he had properly, but properly brake testing someone is bad news, but that doesn't seem to be what it looks like from where I'm sitting. So I'm not comfortable with, you know, that level of discouragement of guys like using racecraft, because it is a skill and some guys are better at it than others. And we know that Fernando's good at it. And
the best, maybe. And
yeah, I actually think it's kind of sad.
I won't mention the people who did it, but the one particular publication put a picture up of Lando's car with his harvesting lights on, suggesting that they were the brake lights coming on and he was brake testing George Russell, which I found quite amusing. Yeah. Look, the only thing that was very ugly in this was the fear in George Russell's voice when he was upside down on the in the middle of the track pleading for a red flag. Yeah. I mean, you could actually, the only time I've heard a bloke that panicky in a car was when I got to the pay window at KFC the other day and forgot my wallet. But yeah, like that was a horrible situation. But other than that, I'm a bit like you, mate. I've come to the point where I think, well, he didn't park the car in the middle of a corner dangerously. No. You know, he slowed down in this. I know it's different circumstances, but that's what Carlos was doing in Singapore last year.
No, it's what good drivers do, you know? Think back to
Disturb air and all that sort of thing.
Think back to was it Abu Dhabi 2016, where, you know, Lewis was trying to back Nico Rosberg into the pack so he'd get past, you know, because he needed cars between to win the world championship. Like that's what you do. That's good race car driving. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that's where obviously it gets a bit with some of the supercar stuff where we see this, you know, this rear contact sort of getting penalized. And even, you know, something that still grates me was the way Will Brown played for that penalty on Giz in Sydney last year, where, you know, you pull the thing up in the middle of the corner, wait for the guy to drill you and then complain about getting drilled. But you know, these are all the factors that drivers should be thinking about when they're driving the car, and it's just it's all part of the art of driving. And obviously, this wasn't anything extreme like that. It was just a guy who went, "Hey, I reckon if I just slow up a bit more here, you know, anyone who's raced cars has done it. You miss a gear somewhere and look in your mirror, you're like, oh, everyone's gone. You beauty, because you just checked everyone up at the wrong point." And it works out really well for you, you know, like it happens.
Yeah.
It definitely happens. So, anyway.
Speaking of Shane Van Gisbergen, as you just did, he ran second, but had the place taken off him in the Xfinity race at COTA. Shane Van Gisbergen was unrepentant, though, after pushing Austin Hill out of the lead on the final lap of the NASCAR Infinity race at the Circuit of the Americas. SVG made nose-to-tail contact with Austin Hill, from all reports might be a bit of a sneaky shitbag, at turn 16, taking both cars wide and allowing Kyle Larson to snatch victory. It would amount to naught after he was given a post-race 30-second penalty for corner cutting in the final lap. He said, "That last restart, he just drove through me at turn one," which he did. "So I guess that's how it is here. I just stood up for myself," and which he did. I watched the whole race. Shane got drilled in that top turn up at COTA. He got nailed by Austin Hill, who took the lead. And you could see Shane thinking, "I'll tell you someone who's not going to win this race. It's you." And he made sure of that. Fair enough.
It's a shame he didn't get a result, you know, and the cup race was a bit of a bust as well.
So, you know, he had a shitbox as well.
without the late overtimes, he probably would have won that Xfinity race, and that might have sort of like that would have secured his playoff spot and probably changed the way he could approach the rest of the season, because he could have, you know, put banking points out of his mind on the ovals and really just focused on learning. But, you know, I think even though the results didn't necessarily come, I think people will be taking notice of this bloke. He's, you know, he's got what it takes, and he's going to figure all this stuff out, and he's going to go very well.
All right, we'll head to an ad and we'll come back for some forward headlines. This episode of Full Credit to the Noise is brought to you by former legends Zero Chance of a Lifetime Australia Driver Search. Got heaps of driving talent, but even more money and don't know how to get into racing? Former legends Zero Chance of a Lifetime Australia Driver Search is for you. Have you always dreamed about racing daywoos around Wakefield Park? Us too. Ever thought you were good enough to race the stars in supercars? Look, it's unlikely, but what have you got to lose? Just bring 20 grand in cash to one of our test and evaluation days, and we'll give you a chance to flog 84 kilowatts of Daewoo power against a field of other punters with zero experience but deep pockets. From there, if you make the grade, you'll get to race a round of the Daewoo Cup for just another 20 grand in cash. If you finish in the top 10 and you've got another 20 grand, you'll be invited to run in another round of your choice. And if you somehow ask bust a series win, you'll be invited to race in next year's Lotus Cup, as long as you've got another 30k in cash. From there, the sky's the limit. As long as you've got coin, we've got a meaningless series for you to run in. Former legends, Zero Chance of a Lifetime Australia Driver Search, where the only thing stopping you is talent and money. Mainly money. Full credit to the noise. Yes, welcome back to Full Credit to the Noise. And well, after last weekend's supercar round at Albert Park, we thought we'd go through a few of the drivers and give them a forward headline to sum up their weekend. We'll skip a fair few of them, to be fair, because it was hard to keep track of many of them. And we'll put in a couple of the notable ones. Let's start with car 87, Will Brown. He won the round. He finished on 287 points. What's your forward headline for Will Brown?
Brock will be nervous. You know, I would still have my cash on Brock for the title at the moment, but I reckon there will be the odd moment that he's going, this isn't as easy as I might have thought.
My forward headline is, read the script, Valtteri.
Yep. Didn't you use that one last time?
Yes.
You rolled it back out.
I can't believe he's not listening.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say about Will is that in footy parlance, sometimes they say you've got to lose a grand final to win one.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe last year was that sort of, that gave him that little bit of maturity after watching Brody just keep rolling and steamrolling.
Yeah, yeah. Scotty Mac 2017, you know, like that made him the animal that he was, that just was unstoppable from that point onwards. So,
yep.
Good point.
All right. The second of the 888 cars was Brock Feeney, ran second for the weekend, had two wins. What's your forward headline for Brock?
I'll keep the theme going a little bit. It's bring back the bend, because that's where it all went wrong for Will Brown last year. And I reckon Brock might be hoping a similar implosion is on the cards at some point this year as well.
Yeah, I got one car to beat. I think that's the only thing he needs to worry about now. It's just has to look to his left in the garage and look at that car. That's the only thing he's going to worry about.
Yeah,
I think these two will fight it out for the rest of the year. I just can't see any of the other cars having that consistency for the entire year.
No, they're going to come and go. The results are going to come and go, but they're just always going to be there. That's what they do.
Especially if other teams just open the doors up for him like they did on the weekend. Correct. Third was the much talked about Nick Percat for Matt Stone Racing. He finished on 219 points. He got a win. What's your four-word headline for Nick?
Percat got the cream. You know the old saying about the cat and the cream? He was a happy man on Sunday afternoon, let me tell you.
Been a sub-editor?
I've said in the past that he doesn't hide his feelings well, you know, good or bad. And he took his very well-deserved opportunity to bask in some glory while the MSR garage quite literally faced the WAU garage in the pits there. He took that opportunity with both hands. So, that's what I'm doing.
My forward headline is uninvited from Walkinshaw parties.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't see him turning to the Christmas party at the end of the year at Ryan's place at Monaco. Chazzy finished fourth for the year. He got a pole for the weekend. He got a pole, but it was a good weekend without being a great weekend. What was your forward headline?
I've gone with it's not far away, because you know there was that mistake on Sunday, but I think that first win in a Ford for a very long time since he left Tickford isn't too far away. He's creeping up on it.
My forward headline is also my old school motto, and it was touch or be touched. He either was serving him or getting served. Mark Winterbottom. Who? Mark Winterbottom from Team 18 ran fifth for the weekend, ran second in one of the races, and was there. Forward headline, AVL.
Boy, he needed that. You know, we talked a lot about how he was under pressure immediately, you know, from Bathurst onwards, having sort of had his backside handed to him a bit by Reynolds at the first round. And all credit to Frosty, that was a classy response. Nice little comeback. So, yeah, good weekend for him.
My forward headline is it 2012 again? Because I think that was the last time he won a round at the Grand Prix, and he wasn't far away. He was pretty good all weekend. Let's scroll down through a few. We'll get to 10th, Matty Payne, who had, well, he had a good weekend and a bad weekend. Mm. He got a pole. He was heading for a win. What's your forward headline for Matty?
I'm going to go with Payne's star keeps rising, because if you take, you know, bad luck in the Mostert case, bad spatial awareness, if you ask Cam, in the Waters case, if you take all that out of it, you know, this was another weekend that Matt really showed us just how good he is. You know, there are big things coming for this guy. He's the real deal.
I agree. Someone likened him, and I thought, oh, geez, that's a bit rich. And then I started thinking about it. Maybe they're right. Said he reminds them of an early part of Shane Van Gisbergen's career.
Yep.
Where he just started popping up.
Yep.
My forward headline is points and pain full weekend. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Get into 12th, Cameron Waters. Made the TV a couple of times. What's your forward headline for Cameron?
Speed returns, results don't. You know, I don't want to try and turn that little pain stash into a negative, so I'm not going to. But you know, Cam was fast again on the weekend, which is good news. I think there's race wins in his future, in his 2024 future. But it just doesn't feel like a title winning year, does it?
Nah. My forward headline is salty water makes monster. Thomas Randall, your man, the puppy killer. Forward headline from a very mixed bag of weekend.
Thank for Sunday, because Jizzy needed that one. Like, he struggled a lot for the rest of the weekend. He made a few sort of, you know, uncharacteristic mistakes, but, you know, on Sunday he was back where he needed to be and got that fourth place.
Yeah, my forward headline is race four saves shocker.
Good.
Ryan Wood ran 16th. Got a top 10, his first top 10 in the series. What's your forward headline for Ryan?
Give Beardo a cuddle, because I don't know what you did to him, but, you know, look, Ryan's still got a lot to learn, but you can't teach raw pace. So I don't imagine anyone down at WAU is that worried about, you know, how he's tracking at the moment, but he certainly needs to find out, you know, what he did wrong to deserve, you know, a penalty that big and avoid anything in the future.
My forward headline is good news, checkered flag.
Yeah.
So he got to see a couple of them on the weekend, which was a good thing for him.
Excellent.
Quickly, I've got one for Aaron Love because I looked at his results. My forward headline for him was just needed three more races, because he kept getting better and better over the weekend. Yeah. He would have cracked the top 10 with another race or two.
Yeah.
So I don't know
it's hard to get a read on where that team really is. You know, like it's so up and down. You're right. Nice bit of progression there, and that's probably what he needs to be doing at the moment.
Yep.
Given, you know, where that team is in the pecking order, is just having weekends like that where he does get better. Because at that stage of his career, he should get better every time he goes out in the car. So yeah, I think worth you know, shining a light on the fact that there was.
Yeah,
that's
he went
how
good.
His weekend played out.
Yep. And kept it straight all weekend too.
Yep.
I just want to touch on Andre Heimgartner, who ran 19th for the weekend. Mm. Have you got a forward headline for him? Because I've got a beauty.
I don't.
Winner of BJR Cup.
Oh, yes.
They had one of the all-time shockers, and they were joined at the hip, those four cars, for a lot of the weekend.
There's some big issues. There's some big pace issues going on there. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. I had one for Jackson Evans from BJR, and that was never beat boss's son. Bad career move. And Macaulay Jones, of course, all you can eat. Macaulay, just one thing this year. That's all we need. All right, let's go to the last two blokes. Cameron Hill. Have you got one for Cameron?
I don't. Nah, I've got one. I'd run out of steam by this point.
Should have come to Kittens.
Maybe.
Would have had a better weekend.
Yeah.
And have you got one for Anton, who really had two DNFs, was a weekend of just misery. Because my forward head line was never recovered from Croft. He took Crofty from a run. That's where things started going downhill.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how that wouldn't sit well with you.
Oh, no good. No good at all. All right, let's take a break and we'll come back for the final segment.
If you're out there forklifting, bobcatting, jackhammering, backhoeing, trenching, digging, drilling, and persuading, you want to know that if anyone is thieving your stuff, that your insurance company will be timely with approving. So get on to Truck Assist, the insurance to keep on earning, with cover for the machines you're hauling and your work truck too. Go to truckassist.com.au, then get back to all that persuading. Limits and exclusions apply. Consider the PDS and TMD on the Truck Assist website.
Yes, welcome back to one of the much talked about segments in podcasting at the moment. It's the Would I Lie to You Mum's Life sticker challenge between me and AVL. Whoever gets the most wrong over the year, if I win and get you to say more wrong answers than right, I win. If not, you win. But whoever loses has to put a Mum's Life sticker on their car. I'm not confident on this one. I'm not going to lie. It's currently 4-3 your way. I'm going to make a statement. You simply tell me, is this a lie or is it fact?
Gotcha.
And it's short and sweet, AVL.
Mm-hmm.
The 1995 and 1996 Australian Grand Prix, plural, set a quirky new record that's still yet to be eclipsed. True or false? This was the first and only time that two consecutive GPs from the one country had the exact same pole sitter, race winner, drivers on the podium, and the same driver to take the fastest lap from one year to the next.
So you're saying that these races was the first time that it happened?
First time that in a country that had consecutive Grand Prix.
Yep.
So...
And what years were these?
95 and 96. The same race winner, the same podium getters, the same pole sitter, and the same driver to take the fastest lap. 95, 96. Don't you be Googling.
I'm not Googling. You can see me. You can see me. I'm not Googling. I think that is not true.
5-3. No good.
Yep. Yeah. That was
those two Grand Prix do have one quirky stat that probably will never be beaten. The 95 and 96 Australian Grand Prix went from Adelaide to Melbourne. Yes, and they're the first and only time
races. Yeah.
That two Grand Prix in a row have been called the same name, the Australian Grand Prix.
I don't want to give away too many of my lie detection sort of skills, but it was the fact that there was so many avenues for that to not be true.
Yes.
Would that help? It made that a fair bit easier.
Good call.
Made that a fair bit easier. But all right. This is good. I feel I was pretty dirty on myself.
Gain momentum again.
When I blew that lead, so it's good to be back.
All right. A little bit of a whisper around from the weekend. Again, it's very hard to get any sort of decent mail from Formula
hearing?
One.
What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that by Miami, Daniel Ricciardo will know his future, whether it ends there and Lawson gets straight in the car after Miami. He has a couple of Grand Prix to turn this all around rapidly.
I don't know that there is the Miami deadline that some were making out. There was definitely a rumour. Mm-hmm. I'd no doubt about the fact there's a rumour. I don't know if it's that hard and fast a deadline. I think that, as we've discussed, benching Dan Ricciardo was different to benching pretty much any other driver that you could possibly bench because of just his profile and his popularity. But he needs, reasonable pace on Sunday afternoon.
Doesn't matter, mate.
He needs some qualifying results. He needs to turn things around pretty quickly.
I mean,
regardless, like, forget about Miami, forget about this or that. Certainly needs to get his shit together a little bit.
I think
start matching Yuki on Saturday.
His little mate got, when he ran in the end, he might have got six because of what happened with Alonso. I mean, that's not a good result for Daniel, no matter how fast he was on Sunday. He could have set 17 fastest laps and it wouldn't have mattered. The fact is he didn't finish in the points and his little mate did. So I think he could be in all sorts, and it's a bit of a sad thing. And I just wonder, thinking further down the track, what sort of career Daniel would have post Formula One. I don't know whether he's one of those guys that's going to go and jump into something else in a real hurry. I get the feeling he won't.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have a, obviously he's such a great personality, such a great marketer. Like, he's going to have a great career post Formula One. I think he was having a good career.
Of course.
When he kind of...
I don't think he'll have a driving career, but...
Yeah, no, that is a good point. That is a good point. You know, some guys are just Formula One drivers.
Yes.
And once they stop being Formula One drivers, they stop being drivers. Yep. You know, that's just how it works sometimes. I'm not saying for sure Daniel's in that camp, but he certainly, even for last year, sort of made it fairly clear that he wanted to be a Formula One driver, yes. And that's why he didn't explore other stuff, because he was still focused on doing that. Yep. So, yeah.
Fan letter of the week. Don't forget, you can send your letters to, you can message us on Twitter, on Facebook, or on Instagram at FCTTN Podcast on all those platforms. It comes from Paul Vanderwood, and he asks quite an interesting question. Can I ask why in the Porsche race, they, Porsche, don't invite internationals over to race in the Porsche at the F1s in Albert Park? Wouldn't that lift the profile of the race?
I don't think it would make a big difference, to be honest. Mm. And Porsche is already forking out a lot of money to be at the Australian Grand Prix. So
I don't think that's their business model either, to sort of promote.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, it's customer motorsport.
That's right.
It's not about, you know, how much. Like, they spend the money to be there, but the customers foot that bill ultimately. Mm. And at the end of the day, like, Porsche internationals aren't necessarily big stars until they get to WEC or IMSA or something like that. I mean, would Harry King have made more people tune in to those races? Mm. You know, I don't really think so. I think Porsche is a great customer for the Australian Grand Prix. It's a really good fit for the event, and particularly the way the event has evolved post-COVID. And I kind of think it just works as it is, and I can't see any major changes.
Any chance of celebrity race coming back? That was always good fun.
That'd be good. That would be good. That'd be fun.
All right, that'll about do us for this episode of Full Crew of the Noise. Don't forget, you can find the show on all the socials at FCTTN Podcast, all one word. You can read AVL's excellent work at speedcafe.com. Don't forget, if you want to read all the big breaking news, head over to that website where we crack all the news first. Until next time, I've been Formal Legend, he's been AVL, and this has been Full Crew of the Noise. We'll see you at the liver transplant clinic.
Full credit to the noise.